Hello, everyone, and welcome to How She Went Global. I'm Laurel Delaney, president of Women Entrepreneurs Grow Global, and your host. Today, we're joined by Diana Youssef, founder and CEO, ChangeWater Labs, Inc. Our topic is helping 4.2 billion people flush sanitarily with portable waterless toilets. But first, let me tell you about Diana. Scientist and entrepreneur Diana Youssef is founder and CEO of ChangeWater Labs, Inc., a mission-driven clean tech venture developing disruptive technologies to increase safe, sustainable, and scalable access to clean water and sanitation. Welcome, Diana, and thank you for spending time with me today.
Thank you for having me. This is so exciting.
Yeah, a pleasure. Then you've come up with a low-cost and entirely waterless portable toilet dubbed the iThrone, which stores human waste in a pouch lined with the proprietary material. What's left still needs to be collected and treated. It's recyclable, but not neutralized, but only needs to be retrieved once every 1 to 2 months. What led you to come up with this solution?
The initial spark was when I was actually consulting to NASA, looking at ways to recycle water on the space station, because on the space station, they can't just turn on the tap and expect abundant amounts of water to come out. They have to essentially reuse every single water molecule that they have up there with them. And so they were looking for solutions on how to recycle wastewater efficiently. And one of the proposals was to use what are called breathable materials. These are materials that we kind of know, like dry fit sportswear that keep you dry, like wick away your sweat during a workout. There are all sorts of breathable materials out there. That was just one example. But they were talking about using these breathable materials, which have the property of being able to draw out molecular water from a wet mass and release it to the dry air. And I thought, well, the space station is the ultimate off-grid location, but we don't need to go that far to look for off-grid locations that lack proper water treatment. You have many of those places here on Earth, and I'm familiar with that, having visited developing countries and seeing how people struggle with water and sanitation in those countries. So I had this idea that use of breathable materials could be maybe a low cost, low energy way to set up water treatment infrastructure in places that essentially have no plumbing. And that idea stuck with me for about 4 years. It kind of just bumped around my head while I was doing other things. And then in 2013, I took the plunge and decided let's figure out if this would work, and eventually landed on the application of sanitation in low resource communities in places that lack plumbing. And we've been working on that ever since.
Explain a little bit more, this concept of like the virtual flush. You know, I'm really trying to get a grip on, you know, the innovation and exactly what it does.
So we developed an evaporative material that we call shrink wrap for crap. And what it does is if you put something wet inside a bag made of this evaporative material, what'll happen is the material will aggressively soak up the water that's in that wet mass and pull it out, and then it will come out the other side to the outside of the bag as basically humidity. And because human waste is 95% water when it comes out of us, that means that you could shrink the mass of what gets collected in the bag by 90 to 95%. So the idea was to create a toilet that has a way of flushing away the majority of waste, quote unquote, flushing it away. But instead of flushing it away as a liquid, you know, wastewater stream, it flushes it away as invisible water vapor to the air.
Diana, does the actual temperature of the environment make a difference on this?
Yeah, that does. So obviously, hotter and drier environments help
Right.
the technology to work more optimally. But we've actually been running pilot toilets in very humid Panama, where humidity is the worst enemy of our solution. And it's been doing a really good job of essentially getting rid of the waste on a daily basis.
Do you have a patent on this technology?
Yeah, we've filed two sets of patents that cover essentially the material, the toilet, and the concept of evaporative sanitation, as well as a more updated version, which is more like a smart toilet that kind of takes cues from the environment and optimizes its performance.
And then is that a global patent that,
Yeah.
okay, it is a
I mean,
global.
we but well, so when you file a patent, you get to pick which countries you want to pay to have it maintained in
Exactly. That's
and
why I was
review. Yeah.
wondering.
So
Yeah.
we didn't, it as a startup, you can't, I mean, I actually don't know that even big companies will have global patents. We picked to nationalize the patents in locations where we intend to operate and where we intend to have partnerships to distribute the technology.
Where is the product actually made?
Right now, we make them by hand because we're a small company that's still we're pre-market launch, but we have been making them by hand here in Boston. But with our recent pilot partnerships, we've had a model of working with partners on the ground who actually will take our design and source the materials locally and construct the toilet, and then we deliver kind of the brains of the toilet, the evaporative components and the things that control the evaporation. So we have a model that we're planning to go to market with, which is an out licensing model where we would work with partners in different regions who have manufacturing and distribution capacity so that they can make the box and we provide the brains. That we think is going to be a much more rapidly scalable strategy for us to get this out to lots of places with us being a small startup.
So give me an example, let's say Panama. So you say you have a partner, and
Right.
that partner, you ship the product to them, they install it then, and
Not exactly. So what
okay.
we did was we sent them the designs
Okay.
for the structural components of the toilet. And those are made out of, whatever materials that we thought, not whatever, but like there's sort of a range of materials that you could make the structural components out of. They could, that they can source locally. So these would be sort of the panels that enclose the iThrone in a housing and the internal structural supports and some of the materials for to make the carts that hold the waste collection bags. And so they essentially got the specs from us, either manufactured or sourced those materials or components locally in Panama. And then in this case, had them ready for us to assemble. But in the future, we would want this to be almost like the IKEA version where it could be assembled by the user or the partner on the ground. And then we brought down the evaporative components and the sort of the controls, which again, the controls would also be something that probably would get outsourced and distributed internationally. But right now we're making them because it's still a prototype. Instead of us building these bulky boxes and shipping them around the world, it just makes a lot more sense, both from a, I think, a cost perspective and a feasibility perspective to have our partners make the box and we bring the insides.
Have you thought about, I mean, I don't, I'm stepping out of bounds here, but have you thought about like licensing the,
Yeah, that's the
that's
idea,
the,
the out
okay, that
licensing.
is the
We
idea.
wouldn't do that for the bags because the bag is the key component that ensures safety, and we need to make sure that we have close quality control on the bags, but the rest of it we would out license.
Now, even on that bag, it's a minor detail, but do you put your company name somehow, an insignia, something on that bag?
I think probably that's what we're thinking, is probably putting some kind of like recognizable branding on it. We haven't done that yet, but we've been talking about it.
And
And
then we'll be responsible for making sure that it does its job wherever it's placed.
I think we would have a testing protocol, like a QAQC type protocol, to make sure that batches are meeting our quality standards, at which essentially quality standards means they don't leak. So, because you definitely don't want these to leak. And then we'd be able to ship them. And because they're bags, they're relatively light and easy and low cost to ship. So we'd be shipping them to our partners, who are essentially in charge of deploying and managing the toilets. Yeah, so I think that's sort of how we do it. I mean, we take the reputation of our product and our company very seriously, and we want to solve a problem. We don't want to create a problem. So we need to make sure that there's no leaking. So that's extremely important for us.
What do you mean by leaking? Be precise on that, because all I have in mind
So
is
yeah,
like
it's a bag.
evaporating, and then I hear leaking. So explain that.
Right. So the bag that collects the waste is non-porous. It's basically, I mean, it's not a garbage bag, but think about a garbage bag, right? Or a Ziploc bag or something that you could put something wet inside of and it wouldn't leak. Our bags, they're not Ziploc or garbage bags, but they're made out of our material. Nothing comes out of them liquid, right? No solid or liquid comes out of them. The only thing that comes out is molecular water, so gas. So essentially, you just need to make sure there are no holes or, rips or tears in the bag, because if, you use that to collect waste,
Right.
that's just going to get everywhere, and you definitely don't want that. So that's kind of, that's one of the special things about our, like, it's when I talked about dry fit, the material that makes your, that's a fabric. That's not non-porous. You could pour water through that. That wouldn't be a problem. But for us, think of our material more like a Ziploc bag or any kind of a bag that you would want to be able to carry something that's mostly water in without it leaking.
Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Sure.
And then one half of the world's population lacks access to safe and clean toilets. So, how do you envision your product making a difference?
What we wanted to do was we wanted to provide a solution that didn't need hookups to plumbing and could be operated on renewable power, so that you could put it in places where you don't have any supporting infrastructure. And that's what we mean when we say it's a drop-in solution. I mean, right now we're building them, integrating them into bathrooms that are, purposed for the iThrone right now, but eventually we want this to be also an emergency response solution that can just be sort of deployed and set up pretty quickly in a challenging environment. Actually, the name iThrone came to me one night because I was thinking, what is it that we're trying to do with our waste evaporating toilet, our waste shrinking toilet? And I thought, well, we're trying to get sanitation beyond the limits of infrastructure. And, for anyone who's worked in the international development realm, we all know the story of how cell phones leapfrogged past brick and mortar infrastructure to be able to get communications, and then all the other things that came with cell phones, mHealth, mFinance, or mBanking, all of that. Beyond the limits of infrastructure. And so I was thinking, well, we're trying to do the same thing. We're trying to get sanitation to leap beyond the limits of sewerage infrastructure or water infrastructure. And that's how I came up with the name iThrone. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get these to places where it's really difficult to establish or install safe sanitation.
Amazing.
That means, and specifically, we're trying to solve a problem that we think the other available distributed sanitation solutions don't solve. which is we're trying to be able to, I mean, initially when we envisioned this was, let's get these out to crowded communities, urban unsewered areas, slums, refugee camps, places where you really can't establish the infrastructure easily, and there aren't the resources to do it, or even the space to do it. We wanted something that essentially gets rid of the waste almost as fast as it accumulates. And short of flushing it, our solution essentially is the next best thing, because it gets rid of the waste rapidly, but it does it in a way that you don't need to flush it down a pipe.
Just miraculous. It's just brilliant.
We'll be right back after this message.
Financial knowledge is power, especially for women. At Associated Bank, we've got you. We help local businesswomen reach new heights with financial expertise that has their best interests at heart. Learn more at associatedbank.com. Member FDIC.
So in piloting projects thus far, Diana, what countries have you served, you know, beyond, we talked about Panama.
Yeah, so we had two deployed pilots in Panama and Uganda. Mm-hmm. And we also have some pending pilots that are intended for Zambia and Turkey. Those are still kind of, those are on hold pending some logistics. We also have a lot of outreach from many other places. We haven't settled on where to go next, but we do even have some interest from Native communities in the United States. So this isn't just a developing world problem. There are plenty of places in the developed world where people lack proper sewered infrastructure for sanitation. And we're getting a lot of inbound interest. We're even getting inbound interest for sort of these upscale or upmarket applications like RVs and yachts and transportation equipment. So there's a lot of applications where our solution would be pretty optimal and would be a huge step up from what's already or what's currently being used. Mm-hmm. It's also a sustainable sanitation. I mean, we're not only are we not using or polluting water, we're actually converting the majority of waste back into pure water.
Incredible. And then how will your projects be funded and how will you get paid?
So on the pilots that we've already contracted, those were paid for by partners on the ground. For Uganda, we actually were granted a pilot grant through a facility called the Humanitarian Grand Challenges that was bringing USAID money and the USAID counterpart in the UK, which is called DFID. DFID money and USAID money to private sector innovators who have solutions that could be highly impact bearing in crisis situations. And that was, we were one of the first awardees of those pilot grants that were announced at the 2018 UN General Assembly. That paid for our Uganda pilot, so which was really encouraging because that meant there were governments that wanted to see our solution be tested and be validated. Because eventually we want to be selling these to governments and NGOs that are large procurers of sanitation solutions for low resource and emergency contexts. Our Panama pilot was actually paid for by a construction company in Panama, a large construction company that's often contracted to build out infrastructure across Panama and I think more broadly across Central America. And they've been interested in our solution since they heard about us when we were still in the concept phase. For them, our solution solves a host of problems where we could actually make toilets possible in places where they just weren't possible before with the currently available solutions. Mm-hmm. So for a partner like a construction company or a sanitation services manager or services provider, We actually are strategic because we are providing a sanitation solution that can go to places that other solutions can't feasibly go.
I'm wondering, Diana, if y will you be going after more construction companies to collaborate?
Yeah.
I see a lot of grants that are offered if you do collaborate with organizations, and I really see like a great revenue generator for you by doing that.
Yes.
Intent. Okay.
I think the way that it's possibly going to work out in Panama is upon the success of this pilot, there's the potential for us to be onboarded as a solution provider into other government contracts that this company is very successful in winning. They have a good relationship with the government, so they're often contracted by the Panamanian government to build out infrastructure across the country. We've also had conversations with similar private sector actors and construction contractors that also build out this type of social infrastructure. What's, this infrastructure for the, low income and indigenous communities in other countries. Yeah, I think that might be a way that we help to get in, or that we might be able to get into those contracts without us initially being sort of validated to the standard that these governments and NGOs, which tend to be kind of risk averse, validated to their standards. Because the businesses, they can make sort of more nimble decisions and they're more willing to adopt new solutions as long as they meet the specifications that they're targeting.
Okay, that sounds good. And we talked about how you envision your product making a difference, but I want to know, what does success look like for you at Change Water?
I think success looks like everyone on the planet having safe, dignified sanitation in a way that doesn't completely consume all of our water resources. So basically, scaling up safe and sustainable sanitation to everyone everywhere.
Wonderful, just wonderful. And then how will women and girls in particular benefit from this innovation?
So it's shocking what happens to women and girls when they don't have a safe, clean toilet available in or near their homes or their schools. In many places, many communities where women and girls have to essentially go in public, whether that's using a public toilet or doing something, essentially defecating in the open, they have to experience their most private function every day out in public. And I guess it's not that shocking that that makes them susceptible to high rates of sexual assault and violence. It's specifically something called sanitation-related gender-based violence. There's a term for it. So that's obviously devastating for and possibly lethal for women and girls in many communities. So making toilets more available and more accessible near where they, live or work or go to school would make a huge difference in reducing that level of exposure to violence. Yeah, no, the other thing that's also kind of shocking, and it's not something we think about here in the States necessarily, is that half the world's schools lack proper toilet facilities. And that makes it challenging for students to get through a day of school, and it makes it especially challenging for girl students to get through a day of school. And so they adapt by doing things that help them avoid the urge to go. They don't eat, they don't drink, and they go to school essentially undernourished and dehydrated. And they also, once they start having their periods, they will skip school for weeks at a time. And that means they fall behind and it becomes harder and harder for them to keep up. And so by puberty, about 20% or more of girls will drop out of school because of the lack of proper sanitation facilities at their schools. And that traps them. They're in many communities, if they're not in school, they're getting married off early. That means they start childbearing as teenagers. overall that's just bad for these communities, and it sets these girls up for a lifetime of poverty and subjugation, and it doesn't bode well for the upward mobility of their families or even of their communities. So keeping girls in school has a benefit for everybody.
Unbelievable. And as I see this, you're just with the product that you have developed, Diana, you're just creating such a world of good.
The one
Kudos.
thing that
Yeah.
I would like to point out is that out of the 17 UN Sustainable Development Goals, a safe, clean toilet has the ability to impact 9 of those goals.
That is so impressive. Which also leads me to, I'm so glad beyond this How She Went Global podcast that you're also going to be amplifying your whole vision and mission for this company with a TEDx talk
Yeah.
coming up. So tell us, how did that opportunity come up? And I assume it's on this topic. And
Yep.
what do you hope to achieve from the people listening to it?
So, one of my daughters goes to an all-girls school, and the school obtained a license for a TEDx, and they wanted to bring speakers to inspire the student body to to show, different leaders in from different sectors. And I was asked, which was a surprise to me because who wants to speak to the toilet lady? But sort of reconciled myself to
You're
that.
too
But
funny.
but in any case, yeah, no, they asked me to speak, and it was recorded last Saturday, so I believe it's going to be available on the website soon. But it was every time I have to speak, and especially speaking to young girls, it's always energizing because it always reminds me why I got started on this. I am the mom of 3 girls, and I think many women have experienced that once they start having kids, their career starts to atrophy. And I think mine just took a total nosedive off a cliff. Like, I just nobody had any value for me except that little baby when I first had her. I sort of decided, that cannot be the answer for women. Like, we cannot be sort of valued in, in our careers based on what everybody else thinks and how, what they what how they perceive our value. And if I was going to prove to these 3 girls that women don't need to ask permission to realize a vision and to push forward on a mission and have an impact and have a career that's defined by, what they want to do, I had to prove it. And so I'm still in the process of proving it, but I'll tell you, the first couple of years when this was like 100% discouraging all the time,
Right.
honestly, the thing that kept me going was this idea that I'm like, I have to prove to these girls that it's possible that they can eventually live a life where they don't have to ask permission.
Which really leads to my final question, which is really related to that, having to do with your 3 daughters. And it's really like, in addition to growing your business to have a lasting impact on our world, is there anything else that is important to you as a mother raising 3 daughters?
In addition to creating more stories for girls to look to of women and who've taken their own path and had a sort of, took on a global challenge. I also want to amplify that story for other women. When I got started, I thought there's must be a reason I don't know of other mid-career mom entrepreneurs in the clean tech space. Like, there's probably a reason this doesn't exist, and I'm probably setting myself up for failure. And that kept me timid for the first couple years that I was working on this. I mean, the only thing, besides the wanting to demonstrate for my girls, the only other reason that I stayed doing this was because nobody else wanted me, right? And I thought, that, you know, that I'm just heading for failure. And nobody does this. And there's probably a good reason for it. But eventually, you know, when I went through this process that essentially turned me inside out. I mean, I am a different person than I was from when I started this. I'm much more confident. I believe that, you know, if you have an idea and a vision, if you keep working on it, you can make a difference. I want to amplify that story for other women. And I want there to be a kind of a trove or a repository of stories of the different ways that women get into entrepreneurship so that the next generation of women entrepreneurs can look to those stories and not feel like they're crazy and not feel like they have to apologize for what they're trying to do.
Okay. Well, thank you, Diana, for sharing your story. And thank you, everyone, for listening. WEG is more committed than ever to serve and help women entrepreneurs and business owners grow their business global by allowing them to tell their stories about going global, like Diana did today, share new ways to take on the world, get motivated, be inspired, and have fun.
To learn more about WEG, visit www.womenentrepreneursgrowglobal.org. Our host is Laurel Delaney. Audio engineer is Bob Maravich. Lead designer is Laura Fairman. The theme song was written by the women-owned company, What Up Pitches, and I'm your announcer, Lucy Brooks. Thanks for listening to How She Went Global.